It's time for Heat Wave Sports. Sit back and relax as you take a tour around the world of sports each and every Saturday and Sunday night. And now, your hosts for Heat Wave Sports, Tim Unglesby and Tom Barton.
Welcome, Las Vegas. It is a Sunday night, 3 hours of Heatwave Sports we have coming for you. I am Tom Barton from TomBartonSports.com. We are going to be joined by Tim Unglesby in a little while, but I have a very special co-host with me tonight. That is Brian Feldman. Absolutely pumped up to sit down with this man. I listen to his show all the time. It's early on the West Coast. But right about the time where I like to listen to sports talk in the morning, does great Facebook Live. I can't wait to get a differing opinion. We got a lot to talk about today. Obviously, the NCAA Finals, we will start with that. We also have to talk about the NBA playoffs. Kind of some teams figuring it out. Some teams, are they poking their heads out? We got to talk about that. I do want to get everyone's take on the Paul Pierce situation. Paul Pierce saying he is better than Dwayne Wade. Look, I'm a Boston Celtics fan, and I think that's a little ridiculous. We'll talk about that. What about, you want to talk about running your mouth? What about Antonio Brown running his mouth? I'll touch on that. The NHL playoffs are here. And then when Tim gets aboard, we will talk a little bit about baseball. I want to talk about the Nats pen and how Craig Kimbrell is still not, he still doesn't have a job, guys. He's still not on. Neither is Dallas Keuchel. And Tim made a statement this weekend. He said he believes that Mike Trout is among the top 25 players of all time right now. Now, look, you guys know I'm as big Trout fan as you can get. That's not an Angels fan. And I think that's overblowing it. But we want to break it down. We're going to break down the numbers. We're going to talk about that when Tim gets aboard. But let me introduce here first. I want to make sure I give him the proper introduction because I really, really have a very short list of sports talk radio hosts in the country that I absolutely, truly enjoy listening to. Brian is one of them. Welcome aboard, my man.
Hey, wow, Tommy, I don't know how I'm going to live up to that. I think I just better shut up and let you talk from this point forward. Great to be here, brother. Even though, the show's early, I'm dead tired. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
I'm a good Paul Heyman to your Brock Lesnar, right?
We're doing
WrestleMania tonight.
You know, the bottom line, Tommy, is if people don't know that out there, you know, I try my hardest to listen to you guys on the weekends, and simply because, in all seriousness, you are probably the most honest sports prognosticator that I know. When you lose, you say you lost. When you win, you say you won. And I greatly appreciate that because when I'm kind of on the fence on making a pick, brother, I'm usually stealing it from you.
Well, that's okay. That's what I'm here for, right? I'm glad everybody's jumping on board. Guys, you want to jump on board some more? 876-1340. Phone lines are open. Or you can hit me up at Tom Barton Sports over on Twitter. I know you guys love to jump on board with Twitter. You mentioned, look, sports prognosticator, handicapper, a lot of guys make claims. And this is the one time that I am absolutely going to stand up on my soapbox and say, guys, I very well am the best in the world at future plays for NCAA basketball. On these airways, okay, I have absolutely nailed three of the past six champions. I nailed UConn 55-1 preseason odds. I have a ticket to prove it, but you have the tape to prove it. I hit Villanova at 28-1 preseason odds before the year. Then I hit Villanova again at 24-1 odds again during their championship. So I hit three championships live on the air before the year began, giving it live. I can't walk away from that. And I'm only bringing that up because we have an NCAA championship where I picked Virginia. I told everybody, look, I like Virginia. I had Syracuse going because I like a long shot, and I was getting 22-1 odds on Syracuse. But I had Virginia against Syracuse in the finals. I rode Virginia. Look, full disclosure, I rode Virginia last year, and they were 16 losing, the 16 to the 1. But that's why I liked Virginia this year. The only way to change the narrative, and you guys have heard me say this on my Sports Garden show, sportsgarden.com, that's with a T. You guys have heard me say this a couple of times over the course of the season. The only way to change a narrative in the history of sports, Brian, if for the rest of their lives, Virginia's the team that lost to a 16. But if they win the championship the very next year, it'll always be attached, won't it? Well, yeah, 16 beat a 1, but what happened the next year? They're able to change the narrative of their bad history. They're able to change that with a win tomorrow night. So I picked Virginia. I'm going to be pro-Virginia here. I like Virginia. I've said all along, Virginia's the best team in the country. But let's break this down. Let's talk about the road, how they got here. Let's talk about Texas Tech, who I'm massively impressed with. Let's get into the NCAAs.
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you what, Tommy. Virginia, the Cavaliers. And, you know, isn't it funny? One of the oldest adages in sports, defense wins championships, and yet you have the number one and number three in Virginia and Texas Tech, respectively, most prolific defenses in the country going at head-to-head. And it's amazing when I watch Texas Tech, and I know we're going to get to that eventually, but a team that is so swarming, I don't know how they lost any games this year. Chris Beard has that team playing every possession like it's the last possession of the game. And they are so disruptive, so hard. And you know, to be fair, Virginia might even be better.
Defensively, I think they are.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that separates, it's funny, you know, you mentioned defense. The thing that separates defense, especially in college basketball, away from everything else, is we now live in a generation where it's all highlights, it's all offense, it's all, you know, shooting from outside. And it's not necessarily that you play a good defense. It's what you present. They're frustrated. You watch North Carolina this year just get outright frustrated on the court and playing Virginia's style, Virginia's tempo. You watch teams do that with Texas Tech this year. Oh, my God, it's slow. They don't know how to play a slowed-down game where every possession sort of counts. So, yeah, these two teams are tremendous defensively. But it's also that frustration level. And what's funny is that I see that frustration level. I know what they're doing mentally. But don't you hear it in the sports books? Don't you hear from fans that go, oh, game was played 57-55. It was a terrible game. And I'm going, no, it wasn't. It was a fantastic game. I love these low-scoring defensive games. You can call it boring all you want. I call it precision basketball, and I love it.
I do, too. I think you are watching basketball at its finest. You are watching collapsing defenses. You're watching teams being forced to beat you on the perimeter. And, you know, and let's face it, Tommy, you said it very correctly. The key to me is getting players in today's game to buy into a defensive scheme. And it is because it is a me generation. It's hard to get college players to buy into defensive schemes, let alone professional players. And that's why I'm so impressed with coaches like Tony Bennett and Chris Beard that can get their players to buy into the fact that, hey, let's be a team and play great team defense and we'll win. And it does create players having to put away the selfish tendencies. And still, in this game, Tommy, the one to me, the intangible you always look is who's the best players on the court. And as good as people like Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, and my God, Matt Mooney for Texas Tech has played, the best player in this game to me by far is Jarrett Culver. He's a lottery pick. He can't wait till 5 minutes to go in the game against Virginia or they're going to lose this game. But if Culver can get 22 to 25 points in this game, I think the Red Raiders win it all.
Well, it's pretty funny because you didn't mention the guy that I've been arguing against. Look, I've been on Virginia for 2 years now. Okay, so I like Virginia. DeAndre Hunter is a lottery.
Yeah, you're right. You're
DeAndre Hunter, he might be the best player on the court. Here's the thing, though, okay? When we talk about best player on the court, I'm a Virginia guy. I want Kyle Guy to have the ball. I want that. That's saying something about DeAndre Hunter as much as it's saying something about Kyle Guy. Before the free throws, because I mentioned this on my show during the week, before the free throws, before what happened with Kyle Guy with ice in his veins this weekend, I said, you know, with the ball late, in whose hands do I want it in Virginia? It's not the guy that might be the best player on the floor. Kyle Guy, who has just asserted himself this season and saying, you know what, DeAndre Hunter, you might be a better pro, but I'm a better college player. And there's so much of that, Brian. I think you'll agree with me. There's so much of that in today's game. We see it in all aspects. We see it in college football as well. There's so much of what will they be at the next level. Well, you know what? The guy that might be better at the next level might not be better today. And I think Kyle Guy is a better college player than DeAndre Hunter.
Oh, I'm not going to disagree with that at all. DeAndre Hunter really, he showed up in the second half of the game yesterday, but he really has not had the presence in this tournament as Kyle Guy or Ty Jerome has had for Virginia. Those are the two guys that continue to seem to come up with the big shots when it has to be. And, of course, you know, we're Virginia, when you talk about destiny, and you talked about it as well, you've liked them all along. I mean, they very well could have lost the Oregon game, and they damn near should have lost the Purdue game, and then again, it happens here again in the Final Four, a double dribble non-call. Forget about the foul at the end of the game. I'm tired of talking about it. That was a foul. Clearly, Guy was fouled. He jumped forward. The body hit Guy. It's a foul, but the double dribble, the official staring right at it, and Tommy, I go back to that and say the only weight I'm going to give the official where I'll get, you just don't see that very often. As an official, you're kind of flabbergasted. Typically, when you dribble a ball off your leg, it goes far enough away from you where the other team or somebody else picks it up, or it goes out of bounds. It usually doesn't sit right there. So the official just got caught up in the moment, but what a moment to get caught up in, because truly, if that doesn't happen, we're not talking about Virginia Texas Tech. We're talking about Auburn Texas Tech.
No, you're 100% right, but I like how you led that off. It was clearly a foul. It was an absolute 100% foul. But yeah, moments before that, the official, he kind of had a brain freeze. And I think it was part of the moment, part of the counting down. I mean, when you're an official, you're also caught up in the moment. You shouldn't be, but you're human. You are already caught up in the moment. And if you're in that moment, you know, it just takes a second for you to hesitate and then go, uh-oh, did I see what I really thought I saw? Should I call it now? You can't call it now. Oh, now they fouled. It gets into too bad of a predicament. One hand says, you know what, it's the official's bad. He totally screwed this up, and that's terrible. The other side of this is, how do you foul him in that position? How do you foul him there? I mean, that is an atrocious, atrocious mental mistake, a terrible mental mistake. And I know, look, Bruce Pearl is losing his mind about the over and back and you know, the double dribble and everything. I get it all. I understand everything that he's talking about. I really do. I feel for Bruce Pearl. I feel for what they had gone through, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't take away the fact, man, you can't foul there. You just cannot foul there.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. It was clearly a foul. I would hate to be the official in that case and have to make a foul that is going to determine the outcome of the game. You hate to do it, but the bottom line is, again, if you see the rules, he jumped forward into the body of Kyle Guy, and it was clearly a foul. And real quick, Tommy, I wanted to ask you about this, because one of the things and kind of the what people aren't talking about this game is the loss of Tariq Owens. And I am telling you right now, I said when he came running back on the floor, I'm like, that ankle is jelly right now. I don't care how much cortisone they shot him up with. If it might get him through a few minutes of the second half, there is no way he answers the bell on Monday. If you saw how far his ankle went over, it was like 90 degrees. I mean, there's no way. And Tariq Owens has wreaked havoc. His length is so key to blocking shots and part of the inside presence and the work on the glass for the Red Raiders. And that, to me, is a huge loss. And I'm telling you right now, you will not see this guy on the floor. He might be dressed. He might give him a few minutes, but they're token minutes, not quality.
Yeah, you know, that's going to be a really interesting, and I'm glad that you bring it up. It's going to be a really interesting point of this game. We are all talking about defense and defense and defense, but you know, these teams, when you play tremendous defense, it puts an onus on your offense as well. But the offense holds half of it. You have to make those shots count. Offensive rebounding is massive when you play a defensive game, because getting those second chance shots, draining the clock another 15, 17, even 20 seconds off more to take that second shot is enormous. Those inside baskets, those under the rebound, under the net rebounds to kick it back out to reset the clock, that's huge. The winner of the offensive board battle is going to win this game, and that is a great point.
Oh, I agree 100%. I think, you know, the one thing is, Tommy, is everyone is screaming the under. I think it's gone from 120 down to 118, meaning a lot of people are liking that bet. This is one of those games, and even though I'm kind of comparing two different sports, I remember years ago in the 2000 Super Bowl with the New York Giants and the Baltimore Ravens, and everyone and their brother was like, there has never been a better under in the world. I won my over bet by halftime. And for some reason, I see this game total coming in around 133. I just think it's going to be a tight game, but I think you will see these teams. They both know that they are going to have to live somewhat on the perimeter because both of them have such tremendous collapsing defenses. They can both play the zone well. They can both play man-to-man, and the perimeter game is going to come into play, and I think you will see guys like Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, and yes, your boy DeAndre Hunter banging those threes for the Cavaliers, and guys like Moretti and Mooney and Culver banging threes for Texas Tech. I see 133+.
I wouldn't be surprised. Listen, it's down to 117 in New Jersey. You could get it 117, 117 and a half at the Mirage right now. So you could get it. It's only, and that's rare to see. The public's almost never on a big game under, almost in any sport, especially college basketball, especially when you're talking about the teams. One of the reasons why I did like Virginia this year, one of the reasons why I liked them in the preseason, is because of the offensive talents that we're mentioning, the offensive guys that we're mentioning. This team could score. This team absolutely can score. Is it really far-fetched to think that we could have a 65, you know, 66 game? Boom, there's your 133. I mean, you know, I don't think that's far-fetched at all. I am not touching this total because I have way too much invested in the game itself. I nailed this, you know, I gave this out to TomBartonSports.com members before the year, and then I doubled it up for March Madness. I said, I'm going with it. But I'm with you. If anything, I'm going the over. I don't think this is a game that's played in the 50s. I think this is a game that's played into the mid-60s. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to add something else to it. These teams are so closely resembling each other. These teams are so tight. These teams are so close, I could see a little overtime. And I could see some overtime maybe being the problem here. If you're a totals backer, if you're somebody looking to take that under, well, watch out because these teams have been playing close, especially Virginia. Is playing close with everybody. It seems like every minute could be possibly overtime. So you don't want to get into stuck into a position where overtime pushes you over. I think 133 might be a little off. I certainly think it gets to the 120s though, and I'm saying upper 120s. You might not be far off.
Yeah, I just, like I said, when something screams at me this way and everyone starts going that way, somehow it goes the other way because in life as in sports, it has a way of evening itself out. So this is just a theory. And again, I like the offensive talent and you have good perimeter players on both these teams and guys like Matt Mooney and Kyle Guy who are both out of their minds right now shooting from distance. And I think that continues into this game. I'm really excited about it. Yes, I know there are people worried, as you mentioned, Tommy, about a boring national championship game. I actually think we are going to see one of the better national championship games we've seen in a while. I think we'll be competitive. I think you'll see runs on both sides. And I will think I think if you really enjoy the game of basketball, you will see X's and O's defensively as good as you've ever seen before.
You mentioned X's and O's, and I've made the argument for a few years now, that I think Tony Bennett is the best coach in college basketball. Now, historically, Coach K, you can't hold a candle to him. I'm sorry, you can't. I don't like Duke either. Roy Williams is obviously there. We're going down the list of start throwing guys out there. Now, I think Jay Wright has held that for a couple of years. But when you win 30-plus games year after year after year, you win 250-plus games the last 5 or 6 years in the ACC, which is the hands-down best league, best conference without a question for the better part of a decade, right? I mean, Tony Bennett is just not getting the recognition. Now, I watched the ascension of Jay Wright from Hofstra to Villanova to, uh-oh, he can't win. And then he wins one, and all of a sudden people going, yeah, he might be the best coach in the country. Well, I got on this bandwagon early. But let's not overlook the Chris Beard bandwagon as well. As far as coaching matchups go, I've got to give it to Tony Bennett because I have to stay consistent that I think he is the best coach in the country right now. I think he's doing his best coaching job this season. But, man, Chris Beard really impressed me. Talk to me about the coaches.
Oh, well, there's no question about it. I mean, Tony Bennett, obviously the coaching bloodline, his dad Dick, who coached him at Green Bay, Wisconsin, when they pulled a couple of upsets themselves, and you saw a great coach and a defensive mind in his father, it's rubbed off into Tony. And it's funny, whenever he says, what will your dad say? Oh, my dad's going to say we didn't do this or we should have collapsed more here. I love it. And Chris Beard, I mean, you're talking about a guy coached underneath the Knights, Bobby Knight, of course, for years at Texas Tech, and then his son Pat Knight, and he has that fire inside of him. I don't think that we'll see him throw a chair or hit a player, but he definitely burns inside. And I mean, you know, he is the winningest coach in UNLV history, 19 hours undefeated, the only one that has ever done it. And I say all the time here at UNLV, Tommy, every time that guy wins in the NCAA tournament, he makes Tina Kunzer Murphy, of all people, look good.
Yeah, well, hey, look, she tabbed him, right? I mean, she said this is who it's going to be. Look, we're talking about coaches. I don't want to get off of the national championship, but I have to go back. Myself, Tim, Ron Natty, years ago, 5-6 years ago, had a discussion on the air where I took a really, really controversial stance, and Tim actually backed me up on it. We got a lot of calls that day. Guys, you want to jump on board, it's 876-1340 and Tom Barton Sports on Twitter. And we rehashed it last week, and I want to get your take on it. I called Tom Izzo overrated. Tim backed him up and said he's getting into that Bobby Cox syndrome. This was about 5 years ago. We've now gone into a position where he has now made six out of his last six Final Fours. He's 1-5. He is a guy that obviously has the resume. Obviously, he is a tremendous, tremendous coach. But he's sort of getting that moniker now. We talked about it years ago. All this train coming. Yes, it's something in college basketball to get to the Final Four. But Tom Izzo was the most experienced coach in this group. Tom Izzo arguably had the best player on the floor. Tom Izzo arguably had the most talented team this year when they were healthy, which was the tournament time. Does Tom Izzo get enough scrutiny? Or is Tom Izzo flying by on his name recognition?
You know, it's tough to say. I don't know that he gets enough scrutiny, or Tommy, to be honest with you. And again, I'm biased here because, of course, being a Michigan State alumni, it's tough on me because I'm a huge Tom Izzo fan. When I was going to school at Michigan State, Judd Heathcote was the coach, and Tom Izzo was sitting behind him, a guy from the Upper Peninsula just chomping at the bit, and said all he ever wanted in life is the Michigan State job. And you know what? I love his honesty because he's proved it as he has stayed there throughout, never left, with plenty of opportunities to do so. But I will say this, man. 8 Final Fours, 9 Final Fours. Yeah, 1 national championship 2000. I can't take it away from this guy. One thing Coach Krzyzewski said a long time ago before he won his first Final Four, I think it was on his fourth try when he won his first, and he was getting criticized for getting to the dance but unable to win it. And then, of course, they finally broke through and they won it. Then they won it back-to-back, and now Duke is a prominent powerhouse, probably the second all-time behind UCLA when you talk about the greatest dynasties in basketball history. But going back to Tom Izzo, and does he get enough scrutiny? Again, no, but I don't know that he deserves it. And on the other side, is he an overrated coach? You know what? I would absolutely feel like I died and went to heaven if somehow UNLV was able to finagle, being that I'm in Vegas now and I like cheering for UNLV. If they could finagle Tom Izzo. I think he's a phenomenal coach. And the one thing is, Tommy, when you go to 9 Final Fours, how nice is it to recruit kids? Now, you can't say, hey, if you come to Michigan State, you're going to win a national championship. But he had a run of about 16 years, if I'm not mistaken, where there was not one kid that stayed with him and graduated that did not play in a Final Four. Pretty cool when you're going to recruit your kid on the couch and I sit down with you and say, look, almost every kid that has ever graduated from the Michigan State University has played in a Final Four. You want your kid to play in a Final Four? How do you say no to that?
Yeah, but you're comparing apples to oranges, though, because doesn't he get compared to the Roy Williams, to the Coach K of the world? Hey, you talk to a regular college basketball fan, you ask them to write down the 10 best college basketball coaches in the country, Tom Izzo is going to be in the top five. Tom Izzo will probably be, after Coach K, who will be one, 2, 3, 4. So, you know, to say, yeah, of course anybody would want him, but that doesn't mean that he belongs on that list. And you're mentioning Final Four, right? Listen, Jim Kelly got to 4 Final Fours, okay? Right? I mean, he got to 4 finals. We don't talk about him. Bobby Cox, got only one ring in his tenure. It doesn't take away what these guys did, right? Marv Levy was a tremendous head coach, but no one's talking about him in the top five head coaches of all time. No one's talking about him in the top 10 because he gets forgotten because he didn't win it. Bobby Cox, most people are not putting him in the top five or the top 10 coaches of all time, but managers of all time. Why? Because he only got one. Tom Izzo skates that issue, and I know you're a Michigan State fan. That's why I wanted to ask you, because Tom Izzo skirts the issue, is what I should say. He kind of moves it aside. You go, oh, well, it's Izzo. You know, he's in the top five. He made another Final Four. Eventually, you got to start cashing in on them. Now, I'm not telling you that he's on an onus of, okay, next year he's got to, but this year was kind of his year to get it. This year, he was the most experienced coach. He was a playing, you know, his team was healthy, playing at an elite level, and he failed again to get a championship. It's not a failure season. He's not a failure coach, but I don't think that we could put him among the top five coaches right now, and I think most people do.
Well, Tommy, I will say this, and again, I am sounding like a homer, so I'm going to try to be as nonpartisan as I can when I say that, you know, if you would have told me at the beginning of the season that Michigan State is going to lose Lankford before January, and they're going to make it to the Final Four, I would have asked you what dispensary you're hanging out at. I mean, he was, before the season, people argue that he might be the best player on this team, not Cassius Winston. And then Nick Ward, you lose him to a broken hand, and that hand, he re-injured it in the Sweet 16, and he played through it, but offensively, his production was way down, even right underneath, you know, inside of four to eight feet, where he's solid, he wasn't putting the ball in the basket, and I'm sure the hand made that a problem. Now, again, I don't mean to make excuses. All these teams play through injuries. They get where they get by being a team and by being well coached. But I think it's so hard to take anything away from what Tom Izzo has done. Yes, he needs to win a national title, but a guy you're talking about in Tony Bennett being one of the best coaches in the country, this guy's big issue to this point is, man, they're a 30-win team every year, but this guy cannot coach in the tournament. And now he's done it. He's gotten over the hump. Some really lucky breaks Virginia has gotten to get to the championship game, but they're there. And so finally, Tony Bennett will get his just dessert. And I've always said the same thing you have. I love his coaching ability. I love the way he relates to his players. And I love the way his players buy into his defensive style of coaching. And I love it. But again, he's got to win because he needs to prove that he's this great coach as well. But as far as young minds in the game, oh, there are none better than him. I love both these guys coaching in this game. Very similar philosophies. And that's why they're both where they're at right now. But no, I can't. I will never say anything against Tom Izzo. I think before Tom Izzo hangs it up, there will be another banner or two hanging in East Lansing. I still believe that. I think this guy does deserve to be always talked about amongst the greatest coaches of all time because it is getting to the Final Four. He's brought so much revenue to Michigan State and to the Big Ten by his success there. I just can't take nothing away from the guy.
Let's go to what everybody wants to hear. Now, I usually try to hold back my predictions because, listen, I got a business to run, right? TomMartinSports.com. I'm giving predictions out. By the way, I'm absolutely on fire. I'm hitting about 70% in the last 60 days, but I'm not here to sell, okay? I am going to give a prediction because if you've been listening to the show all year, you know what I'm going to pick anyway.
Yep.
I'm on Virginia. I'm rebacking them, okay? Now, I will hedge. Those that want to know, I will hedge. Okay, I got 10-1 odds on Virginia before the year, and then I backed it up at 10-1 odds again. They were 8-1, you know, but you were able to get it during the year again. So I have backed Virginia all along. I'm not getting off them. I'll hedge to make sure I win a little bit of something, but I truly do think that it's a magical season. You said it. There are shots they shouldn't have had, calls that were missed, things that happened. You could say it's lucky, and I'm going to go, yeah, I agree with you. But there's also that mystique in sports. In sports, there's sometimes that team that you go, wow, everything kind of just breaks their way. Everything is just going their way. I think after last year, what happened, that taste is still in these guys' mouth. And they've had this all year on their mind. We've got to do this. We don't want to be the laughing stock forever. And in order to do this, we've got to win. I think they hit more shots. I think they are just a little bit better at what they do than at what Texas Tech does. And if they played a team that wanted to run, if this was Auburn sitting here, you know, again, they could have lost this game. If this was Michigan State, I'd be worried about Winston just being the best player on the court. I don't think that Virginia is intimidated. I think Virginia is saying, let's play that way. Let's play defense. I love it. I think Virginia wins this game. I think it's real close. 1-point spread is going to look a little perfect, I think. I really do think it's another game down to the wire, potentially overtime, maybe a last-second bucket, but Virginia hoists the trophy. Tell me your prediction.
Yeah, Tommy, it's hard to pick against Virginia, and for a whole different reason. Up until number 11, Tariq Owens, got hurt in this game, and I know I'm beating this dead horse into the Elmer Glue Factory, but, you know, ever since that happened, I said, wow, that is such a game changer. If you go back and you watch their play throughout the tournament and how important this man has been, his length has just been exceptional on both the on both the offensive and the defensive glass, and he has also hit a couple of big buckets, and he does have a little bit of range for a long, lanky guy. He is going to be sorely missed because defensively, he's probably the third best defensive player on the court for Texas Tech, and that's just a huge replacement. Guys like Brandon Francis, Kyler Edwards, they're really going to have to step up in his place, and I just don't know that they can do it. I think Virginia and you know, playing in the ACC, which I'll take nothing away from the Big 12, but the bottom line, up until this year, the Kansas Jayhawks are the only team in the history of the Big 12 that have made it to the championship game. So, ACC, I mean, they're regulars there. If it's not Virginia, it's North Carolina, it's Duke. I mean, they're very familiar with this position. So, I think Virginia wins this game. I think it'll also be a tight one, but I'm going to say this. If Tariq Owens was healthy, I'd be making a different prediction.
It should be a good one. All right, that's it for the NCAA Finals. If you guys still want to give us a call, sure, it's 876-1340. Write us at Tom Barton Sports over on Twitter. We're going to take a quick timeout. Come on back. We never talk about hockey on the show, but Tim's not around. So let's talk a little hockey playoffs. I want to get your insight. Not necessarily Vegas Golden Knights, but the hockey playoffs in general. I have a contention that the East is absolutely unstoppable this year. I think you're going to probably take the other side. We'll talk about it and more on the way back. This is Heat Wave Sports.
Hit us up with your phone. Text Fox to 69187.
Text Fox to 69187.
You guys, look! It's Golden State Warriors star Steph Curry. Oh my God, Steph, I'm such a big fan!
Thanks, it's nice to meet you.
Hey, I know we just met, but can I sit on your lap during your next post-game press conference?
Sure, I don't see why not. This is exciting for the whole Bay Area to be just four games away from the championship.
Dad, I duked.
The other team's not just gonna go away, though. We've gotta stay focused, keep doing what we've been doing.
Fat lady! Dad, a fat lady!
Yeah, I see her, Peter.
Make her go!
That's not how we talk to people.
Make her go!
I'll leave.
Yay, I'm learning bad lessons.
Now back to Heatwave Sports with Tim Oglesby and Tom Barton.
All right, guys, back here, Sunday edition of Heatwave Sports. Tom Barton, TomBartonSports.com with Brian Feldman, special guest host for right now. I know that Tim's coming in. It'll be a three-man booth. I'm not sure what time he's getting in. He's fighting traffic coming back from watching the Angels play. I know he's been on the road after watching a good weekend, Mike Trout blasting them out. So he'll be joining us in a little bit. We will talk some baseball in the final hour. But something we don't talk about here, and I've explained this many times, but for the new listeners out there, we don't talk a lot of hockey. And the reason is because, you know, listen, Tim was one of the first voices ever for Las Vegas hockey. I'm a guy that worked in hockey 15 years ago. It's not lack of knowledge. It's, look, we're on a hockey station. I think, you know, those guys do just a tremendous, tremendous job. How do you follow Frank and do, you know, talk about something that, about the Vegas Knights that Frank wouldn't already be on top of? So that's what we don't talk a lot about hockey, but the Stanley Cup playoffs, the matchups are set. Me and Brian, I'd like to go over some of it for the next 20 minutes or so. We're not going to dive deep into Vegas. I want to get your opinion, though. To me, here's my take on the Vegas Golden Knights, and let the boo birds begin. By the way, 876-1340, Tom Barton Sports over on Twitter. Okay, My take on Vegas is this. We can carry them very far. We know that in the Stanley Cup playoffs, a hot goalie can carry you very, very far. I very, very much am concerned that they just don't have the consistent scorer this year. And not even the consistent scorer. They don't have the 1-2 punch that a team like Calgary has, a 1-2 punch that a team like the Jets have, even a 1-2 punch that maybe a team like the Sharks have, the Predators. I think that the Golden Knights can move on. They might be able to win a round. Hey, maybe they might be able to win two on the back of Fleury. But the lack of scoring concerns me. The lack of scoring, consistent scoring option concerns me. That's my take on the Golden Knights. It's not a popular take on this station, I'm sure. It's not a popular take in Las Vegas, I'm sure. But I'm calling it as I see it, Brian.
Well, I'll tell you, Tommy, it's understandable what you're saying. I think Vegas does have the punch that you're talking about. The neat thing about the Vegas Golden Knights, Tommy, is they can match up against any style of hockey. I don't care if it's a skilled team, a fast team, or a physical team. The Vegas Knights can play all three styles. But the key in hockey, unlike any other sport, is one player can dominate and change everything. We've seen this happen throughout history, and that is the man between the pipes, the guy in the net. Granted, Marc-Andre Fleury is on the upper side of his 30s right now. He's seven concussions deep into an NHL career. One more, I don't think they'll clear him anymore. But he's gotten through last year and this year. You know, he did have that one last year that held him out of a lot of games early. I think Marc-Andre Fleury is the difference maker in this series. On the other side, as good as the San Jose Sharks are, Evander Kane is one of the nastiest gnats in the game. He will bother you. He will score. He can do it in bunches. They've got Erik Karlsson back, which is a huge, that's going to be a problem. That's going to post a problem for the Vegas Golden Knights. This is a team, Joe Thornton, they want to win it for him. Barnes is probably one of the best offensive, if not the best offensive defenseman in the National Hockey League. But Vegas has matched up well against them, Tommy, since the inception of this team a year ago. They hold a dominating win percentage against them, and San Jose has ended the season very similar to the Vegas Golden Knights. They both have not played well down the stretch. Granted, San Jose won the final game at the Shark Tank against between the two teams, but I think the Vegas Golden Knights can turn it up a notch, and the biggest intangible, Tommy, is this team is fresh off of a deep playoff run a year ago. All these guys understand the elevated speed in the National Hockey League and in any sport when it comes to the playoffs. They just got through with it, but as long as Karlsson, Marchessault, and Riley Smith on this team can play like they did last season and into the postseason, which they have the capability of doing it, this team's going to be fine. Marc-Andre Fleury will be fine. The intangible, and remember I'm saying this right here on your show on Heatwave Sport, is Martin Jones of the San Jose Sharks. This guy is at best this season has been inconsistent. So he has been a head case, and especially when it comes to the Golden Knights, if Martin Jones becomes a sieve, the Golden Knights could walk away with this series and win it in five games. If Martin Jones stands up and plays to the best of his ability, this could be a five-game series the other way. I think it's going six or seven, and I think the Knights are moving on. A little bit of a homer pick, but again, I always look at the man between the pipes, and when it comes to that intangible, I give it to the Vegas Golden Knights. Even an aging Marc-Andre Fleury is still one of the top goaltenders in the National Hockey League.
I think he could push them through this round, and I'm not taking the Sharks in this round. I think he could push them through this round. The Flames worry me. The Flames worry me greatly. They have five scorers before you go to the Vegas Knights score. They have five guys that scored more points this year than anyone on the Knights. That's where it starts to get dicey for me. I don't think they could get by the Flames. You know, I don't think the Flames have a problem with the Avalanche at all this year. So I see Vegas against the Flames in round two, and that's when it will worry me. Can Fleury put them on their shoulders for this round? Yeah. Do I think he does it? You know what? I'm going to call for Vegas in six. You know, maybe. Yeah, so they could do it at home. Yeah, maybe Vegas even in seven, but six or seven, I'll push Vegas through. But you're looking at that Flames matchup, and I think it's a bad matchup for this team. They just don't have the scores. So for me, I got Calgary going to the championship out of that, that section. You know, the Predators and the Jets would be way too easy to just kind of push through. Look, the Flames are the best team. They've been the best team all year. I just look at their firepower, and I just can't see Fleury being able to stand on his head for two rounds.
It's going to be tough. The Calgary Flames, as you mentioned, I mean, Johnny Gaudreau, one of the most prolific scorers in the National Hockey League now. I think he had 36 goals. Sean Monahan, also a really good player. Lindholm can put the puck in the net and is one of the best distributors, I think, in the National Hockey League. And Matthew Tkachuk, really good for the Calgary Flames. But
what about Giordano? I mean,
he is so much fun to watch. 74 points, and he's a defenseman. I mean, you are 100%. Giordano is a great player, not a good one, a great one. And this Calgary Flames team can wreak havoc. There's no question about it. Mike Smith and Rittich both can play in the net and both do a decent job. But I'll tell you right now, as much as you dismiss the Avalanche, Tommy, this is when a team like Colorado that has been playing playoff hockey for the last week and a half to get in, that's a team, if you sleep on them and they steal a game, you know, one of the first two games in Calgary, they could surprise you. I said the same thing with the Blue Jackets in Tampa Bay. I don't think the Blue Jackets are going to lose in the first round any more than I think the Flames will. But I'm telling you, the Tampa Bay Lightning losing the first round. But the Blue Jackets and the Colorado Avalanche, the eighth seeds, don't overlook either one of these teams. They've been playing, now not so much the Blue Jackets, but the Colorado Avalanche have been playing for their playoff lives. And they just got in, and they are playing really good hockey right now. Calgary can't take them lightly, and a lot of times that number one seed going up at eighth seed in any sport, you're thinking we should win this. We should win this matchup. We should win a 7-game series. And if they get caught up in that, the Avalanche could move on.
Well, you moved over to the East, and I love it. Look, this the East this year. I just think it's massively superior to everything in the West. I would argue that right now, playing right now, obviously the Lightning, the best team in the league, the Bruins. The Penguins are playing tremendous hockey. The Maple Leafs are playing tremendous hockey. And the Capitals are sitting there with the defending champions. I mean, even the Islanders. Look, I don't believe in the Islanders. I'm not an Islander fan. But even the Islanders, you can't discredit for what they've done. I would go to argue right now, outside of the Flames, who I would throw in there, four of the top five teams in the league, and you might be able to argue five of the top six in all the NHL are residing. Bruins Maple Leafs battle is going to be phenomenal. You mentioned my Lightning, though, and I say my Lightning because I have a season play on them. Terrible odds, 5-1, but I've felt really good all year. I don't think. Not only do I not think that they lose a game against the Blue Jackets, I'm not sure they lose more than one game getting all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. I think, and I know winning the President's Trophy. I get it. It's a jinx. Everyone says it, right? I think it's just one of those years where this team might go through the rest of the league like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah, two 40-goal scorers in Stamkos and Braden Point. The Tampa Bay Lightning, they are 100% real. Of Vasilevskiy, I mean, my God, what an incredible season he's put together as well. And they should have no problem moving through the first round, the second round, and this team could walk all the way through. But again, it just depends. You just run up against that hot goaltender, and you talked about it as well. The Washington Capitals. People are saying, watch out for them. They could get surprised early. They could get surprised early. They also could win the Stanley Cup again. I mean, they are still the defending Stanley Cup or the reigning Stanley Cup champions, and a team that is very well put together, plays really well together, and again, coming off of a victory in the Stanley Cup Finals, they're a team that could make some noise. Your Tampa Bay Lightning, and I'll call them yours since you got them at 5-1. I do like them a great deal, but a team, Tommy, that we're not talking about, they've cooled off just a little tiny bit, but this is a team that to me is just like I said this about Texas Tech at the beginning of the NCAA tournament. I'm saying about this at the beginning of the postseason in the NHL. Watch out for the St. Louis Blues. That is a hockey team that could surprise everybody, and they've got an ex Vegas Golden Knight who's having a hell of a season over there, a guy that everyone wasn't really thrilled about getting rid of David Perron, but in the same respect, David Perron was a big part of the Golden Knights team. He's just gone over there to this team and has become a 30-goal scorer and has the St. Louis Blues primed to make a deep run in the postseason.
Oh, Ryan O'Reilly is scary in himself, and while you touch on that, I do a lot of work. I used to do a lot of work in Pittsburgh, And how about Crosby, Malkin, and they get the Islanders in the first round? Look, I hate to throw under the bus. SportsGarden.com always is right before the pregame show of the Islander games. I hate to throw them under the bus, but I think that they've accomplished so much this year. Penguins won them pretty easily. And then you get Penguins caps for years. Before last year, the Penguins owned that series. You get Crosby, Malkin, all of a sudden staring at a Lightning or a Leafs or a Bruins. The rest of the league got to be worried. We just don't have Crosby playing the way that he has. So I like, listen, I like your pick of the Blues, man. I think that they can surprise, especially in a West that I do think it's open. Look, Calgary is good. I do think the West is pretty open. I could see the Predators getting there, Winnipeg, Blues. You could make an argument for everybody outside of maybe the Stars and the Sharks. I don't think going all the way. You know, you could make an argument for just about anybody. The East is where, to me, where the fun games are. It starts on Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. You guys want playoff, for series prices? I'm taking the Penguins. I think they destroy the Islanders. I can't imagine that they get by. The Caps, Hurricanes, I'll stay off of that one. Bruins, Maple Leafs, you got a coin, right? You know how I feel about the Lightning. The Lightning, I think, goes through them really quick. And then I'll take the Flames. I'll take the Knights, but I'm probably not putting money on it. I'll take the Preds, and you like St. Louis, but I'll take Winnipeg, probably not putting money on any of those. The two best series that I like, I love Tampa Bay, and I don't care what price I have to put on them. And I'm going to take the Penguins to beat the Islanders, and I probably will take the Penguins to beat the Capitals in the next round as well.
I love the Pittsburgh Penguins as well. Now, as far as loving them, I love them as far as advancing and playing. I can't stand the Pittsburgh Penguins, being a Detroit Red Wings fan, but you said it best. You know, when he's at the top of his game and when he turns it up, Tommy, and puts it in his head, I still would take Sidney Crosby over anybody in the NHL for one game. When if you take every player playing at their very best, I still take Sidney Crosby. This guy has a knack for winning hockey games, winning big hockey games, putting the puck in the net at the right time, and once again, 95 points this year, 33 goals. I mean, the guy's unbelievable. And, some other guys in the team, you know, you mentioned Malkin, who is an incredible player. Jake Guentzel is not too shabby himself, 38 goals this year. And, of course, Phil Kessel is always a dangerous player, especially in the postseason. The Penguins are a team you can never sleep on because, to me, they have one of the top five players in the history of the National Hockey League still playing at an extremely high level on that team.
Real quick, we only got a couple of minutes before we got to go to a break, but I got asked this question yesterday. I'm going to address it on my show tomorrow, but I want to address it with you here. Connor McDavid apparently has asked for a trade, or the rumors are coming out that he's asked for a trade. I was asked, you know, what team does he fit with? How about every team? Right? You get a guy like
seriously.
That. How about every team? But this is not a New York bias. I think the Rangers have the package to go get him. They have two guys that are in the minor leagues, that two goalies that really will be number one goalies. They have a ton of draft picks. They're going to have another first rounder because they're terrible this year. I think that it's going to take a massive package to get them. The Rangers make sense to me. I don't know if they're going to actually go that route. They're kind of in the rebuilding process. But that was to answer that. Where do you see McDavid going, or there's no way he's going anywhere?
I just don't know how Edmonton lets him get away, but, you know, just a couple years removed from a playoff run and a team that looked like they were on the upswing, and, you know, a team that if you would have asked me 3 years ago, I would have said by 2019, this team's competing for a Stanley Cup final. I mean, Connor McDavid is, you know, I hate to overuse a cliche that's been used forever, but on the ice, he is poetry in motion. He is one of my favorite players to watch play hockey. His skill set is as high as anyone I've ever seen play the game, and I think the upside just keeps getting better. Really weird the way he went out the other night. I don't know if you saw him go down on the ice. He was screaming, "It's broken!" And it wasn't broken. He's got an MRI coming. I just don't think he wanted to skate up anymore. He wanted to get the hell off the ice and out of Edmonton. I think that is a really interesting assessment, Tommy. The New York Rangers does make sense for Connor McDavid. They've got room under the cap. They can fit him in, and that's a really good thought. It just, again, I don't know how he gets out of Edmonton. I mean, they will scream Harry Carey to let that guy get out of town.
I never imagined that we would be talking about this until I started reading, the Canadian newspapers. I said, no, he's asking out. I mean, it was more. It wasn't a one kind of shot deal on the back page of something random in Montreal to score a start. No, this was widely reported that he's asking out. And I'm going, well, you know what? I know the Rangers are in a rebuild. They got two goalies. They got some draft picks. He would be star power. It sort of makes sense. All right, guys, we're going to take a timeout here. It's Tom Barton and Brian Feldman here on Heat Wave Sports. Tim Unglesby will be coming up in a couple of hours here. I think he's going to be joining us for hour number three. Hour number two, though, what do we do best here? We run our mouths. We're going to talk about some people running their mouths. Paul Pierce, Antonio Brown, and we'll get into the NBA playoffs. And hear from you guys, 876-1340. Tom Barton Sports over on Twitter. Hit us up right now, and we'll be back right after this.